Welcome, 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 geeks and nerds, girls and boys, to a brand new episode of Geek to Me Radio, a full show tonight. First up, Chris Hacker joins us from the Oblivion Bar podcast to give us his impressions and reviews of San Diego Comic-Con 2023. Later on, my executive producer Joey V and I will break down Barbenheimer. Plus, we have a ticket giveaway to see Spider-Verse live in concert at the Factory. All that and more, stand by.
We're talking TV, comics and movies, and video games. Star Trek from Star Wars, we'll try to explain. There are 12 doctors, 4 Marvel chances, 1 ring rules and more. To be the greatest Pokemon master, you must catch them all. You must catch them all. Try to catch them all. Gotta catch them all. Gotta catch them all.
And for those of you driving around the greater St. Louis area tonight, listening to us on the Big 550 KTRS, hello to all of you. Thank you for tuning in. If you're streaming us on YouTube and Facebook, hello to you there. Thank you for watching. And of course, if you're hearing us after the fact in the podcast form on whatever platform you listen to there, we do appreciate you subscribing and listening there as well. Quick bit of housekeeping before we start. We just got something come in. The National Weather Service has issued a severe thunderstorm warning for Madison, Illinois, beginning at 8:57 this evening, going until 9:57 this evening. That's a severe thunderstorm warning for Madison, Illinois, from 8:57 p.m. until 9:57 p.m. this evening. So stay tuned. As soon as the new weather alerts come across, we'll bring those to you as we go. Right now, my first guest, Chris Hacker from the Oblivion Bar, had the chance to meet them at one of the Fantasy Shop events. I can't remember which one it was. Maybe in Free Comic Book Day, but they were set up there, so I got to meet him and Aaron. And Chris has been kind enough to join us on his birthday, mind you, to discuss San Diego Comic-Con 2023. Chris, thanks for being on the show tonight.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for having me, James. Appreciate it.
Of course, of course. So I've never been to either of the big two. There's New York Comic-Con, there's San Diego Comic-Con. I've never been, and I almost feel like if I could take a superpower with me, I would need to be Jamie Madrox, the Multiple Man, so I could split myself off, because you have to be at the Hasbro booth to get their exclusive thing and sign up for that. You've got to be over here for the meet and greet with this people. You've got to go to the big hall to see the big stuff that they're talking about, the new Marvel stuff. I cannot imagine trying to do this con in the fashion that you and I would want to do it. So talk to me a little bit about, this is not your first year going, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, so I think con rule number one is that you just have to accept that dark, cloudy FOMO cloud that hangs above you when you go to these type of conventions, because there is, like you just said, there's absolutely zero chance that you're going to get everything done. You have to honestly just make an unsurmountable list before you go and to just hope that you hit maybe 40 to 50% of it throughout the entire weekend. But no, actually, so this is not my first time going to San Diego. It was actually last year, 2022, was my first year going to San Diego. And it was, to date, my favorite convention ever until this year, 2023, was a better con. And I'll say the number one reason for this, and most comic fans who have heard about the, you know, the WGA and the SAG strikes, of course, no celebrities were at this year's San Diego Comic-Con. So this was all comics. It was everything with San Diego this year. There was no Hall H. There was nothing. It was strictly comics. And I'll tell you selfishly, James, it was an incredible experience to see Artist Alley and the normal floor just packed to the brim with people ready and excited for the medium. Every major announcement throughout the weekend was basically comic related. There was no trailers, nothing. So I had a great time. I loved it so much. And like you were just saying, you hadn't been to the big two. I'll be at New York Comic Con going into November as well.
Yeah, I feel like it, because I remember seeing some other people post about stuff without, because Marvel wasn't there this year, Warner Brothers wasn't there, they couldn't be really with the, as you mentioned, the Writers Guild and the Screen Actors Guild strike, but I feel like that kind of is what Comic-Con should be, is just about the comics.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's all a money maker thing. San Diego is much bigger than just comics. Of course, it is the Comic-Con, as a lot of people like to say. It's the original. They've actually, not to be too grim here on the show, but they've actually sued a couple comic convention companies because they want that Comic-Con name because they are the Comic-Con. But you know, this year, I have a very unique perspective when it comes to San Diego Comic-Con because I actually work for a company called Comic Sketch Art. And for, you know, many people who have gone to these conventions, especially the bigger ones, they know Comic Sketch Art. They've been in Artist Alley. They've seen a large portion of Artist Alley. A lot of time, the Comic Sketch Art booths are your biggest names. Your Donny Cates, Ryan Stegman, Frank Miller, J.C. Fabok, Mark Brooks, Ryan Otley. I'm thinking of, there's so many, there's so many different of the biggest names in the medium are all under the banner of Comic Sketch Art. And I've been very fortunate enough to work for that company and work basically shoulder to shoulder with these guys and get to know them on a very personal level.
Wow. That's very cool. So you actually get to go in there as a professional then. And you're, you know, like you said, you get to just, hey, Frank Miller, let me ask you this about something. So it's must be quite a different experience also for you versus the normal con goer.
Sure. Well, you know, I'll tell you, this is one of my favorite stories to tell. So last year at the San Diego Comic-Con 2022, I just finished working a very busy segment with Tom King and Mitch Gerrits. And they had left the booth. They had gone to do a panel or something. And I was looking down, putting something away. And I have a hat on. I have my St. Louis Cardinals hat on. And I was looking down and I hear, hey, where's Tom and Mitch? And I just kind of inherently answer. I was like, oh, they actually just left. And I look up. And it's Todd McFarlane looking at me face to face with a Venom hat on. I'm like, oh, like I kept it cool in the moment, but I was totally fanboying for like the next 30 to 45 minutes.
Wow. And see, that's the kind of, a lot of the Todd McFarlanes, the Rob Liefelds and things like that, sometimes they only hit those coasts because there's a lot of great conventions like Planet Comic-Con, Pensacon, stuff that I've gone to just this past year that don't seem to attract, I think, the two big cons. A lot of the people, when you get to the level that Todd McFarlane and Jim Lee and everyone are at, they're going to, I don't want to say be more choosy because there's some other great cons besides them, but they're usually going to hit the two big ones.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I would actually even go as far as to say that they are choosy. They purposely only go to New York and San Diego because that's where the biggest crowds are. And what I find really interesting about Todd is that if you've ever been to these conventions, and he's a legend. I'm not ever going to tell him how to run his business because not only is he a legend in the medium, but he's a legendary businessman as well.
Yeah.
He's built an empire with McFarlane Toys and Image, of course, and everything else that he's done in his career. But people who know this, who are big fans of McFarlane, that when you go to get something signed by him at these conventions, he actually has a list of comics that you can bring. So if you say you have a Spider-Man number one from the early 90s that you want to get signed by him, if it's not on the list that he wants you to sign, which is usually a Spawn related comic or whatever he's working on at the time, he won't sign it, which I find hilarious.
Really?
His lines will go around the block. But if you get to the front and you realize that you don't have the comic that he wants to sign that convention, sorry, you're out of luck.
Oh my gosh. And see, I don't know if you've seen some of my posts, but what I do is I've got the original promo posters that were up in these stores back in the 80s and 90s. I collect those and I try to get enough signatures on them. I get them custom framed. So I've got some posters that I would want signed, not comic books. Would you think that would not make his list? Like it's got to be a Spawn comic. It can't be this comic. Is there like specific rules for that as well?
Well, I think that, as long as it's Spawn related, he's definitely going to sign it. I don't think there's ever any Spawn related memorabilia or comic that he won't sign. But I think in terms of like the big two or any other thing that he's ever worked on, he does have very strict rules because he knows that people will want to flip those because he was only at Marvel for a couple of years. And, you know, he's done things here and there. But, you know, I would assume that if it is Spawn related, absolutely he will sign it for sure.
So I'll have to get my Batman versus Spawn poster and then wait for him to do another CGC private signing for my other stuff, I guess.
There you go.
Man.
Yeah.
So with the cons, talk a little bit about, because like I said, I've never been to either one of the two big ones because I've got just a small case of agoraphobia and I think I'd just be overwhelmed. My senses would get inundated. Talk a little bit about, in your estimation, what the biggest difference is between the New York Comic Con and the San Diego Comic Con.
Well, it's funny you say that in terms of like the sensory overload. It's real when you go to these conventions. There's no way that you're not going to be surrounded by people. And no one, I'll just say right off the top, no one walks at any certain speed. You'll see it. It's like the universe clashing in together. It's atoms and like just things are happening all around you. And you have no idea where to look. at the end of the convention, you're often just like recapping and trying to remember what you had done and all this other stuff. Cause, you know, working in my industry, what we do is, you know, again, working with Comic Sketch Art, everybody that works at those booths, we will work our butts off the entire weekend. And each night we are partying, we work hard, we play hard. We will party that night as well. But, you know, in terms of the difference between San Diego and New York, San Diego is obviously a little bit more, I don't want to say exclusive, but it's a little harder to get to. It's obviously a little bit more expensive as well,
right,
to go to these, you know, go to that convention. And San Diego itself is kind of expensive. I will say that, in terms of years prior, obviously San Diego has the Hollywood aspect, but New York is bigger. New York Comic Con, especially Artist Alley, you know, at San Diego, Artist Alley is, I would say about 4 or 5 rows of about 40 yards of creators. So I would say less than 50 creators. New York Comic Con, however, oh my gosh, it is well over 300-400 creators at Artist Alley.
Wow.
It is so awesome. It has an entire floor. New York Comic Con is basically 3 levels. You have there at the, I want to say it's the Javits Center, is the convention center there in New York. The bottom floor is Artist Alley. The middle floor is like your kind of normal, just like everyday Joe type of floor with the media and different booths and such. And then there's a top floor that has a lot of smaller, you know, toys or smaller comic publishers, things like that on the very top floor. So, but again, most of my experience has been in Artist Alley, and it is madness to get anything done in Artist Alley. You can't do everything. San Diego, however, and especially this year, I will say, I had a great opportunity to work with Comic Sketch Art and work with, we did a lot of Whatnot shows. James, are you familiar with Whatnot at all?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay. So for people at home who aren't familiar with Whatnot, it's kind of like eBay and Twitch mixed together. It's an app. Shameless plug on the Oblivion Bar. We are actually sponsored by Whatnot. So we are a partner with them. We love their product. We love their platform. It's very community based, but you can sell and buy anything. And one of the biggest genres on Whatnot is comics. So Comic Sketch Art being the forward thinking industry that they are, company that they are, they thought, well, why don't we get all of our top talent and sell at these conventions.
Right.
So what my role was at San Diego this year, just a couple of weeks ago, was to sit down with creators. And here on your screen now, you see me with Zoe Thurgood. Unfortunately, I didn't have a chance to meet her, but I did get a couple showings with Ryan Stegman. I had one with Todd Knock, Jim Zub and Dan Panosian, Amanda Connor and Jimmy Pamiotti, Mitch Gerrits. I'm trying to think who else off the top of my head. Just so many. They're like all of our talent that we have. Ryan Otley is another one that comes to mind. Mark Brooks. Like I got to, for 30 to 40 minutes, sit down with these creators and kind of be the mouthpiece between the people watching at home and the creator. And it was so much fun. I actually had a draw off with Mirka and Dolfo. People at home who are fans of Mirka. We had a Vamprella draw off, and hers was far better than mine, but that's the type of thing that you can do at Whatnot. And, again, going into New York in November, I hope to do the same thing because it's an experience that very few people get to have. I feel very fortunate. It's not beyond me to know how incredibly lucky that I am to have that opportunity.
And if you're just now tuning in, we're talking with Chris Hacker from the Oblivion Bar podcast, recapping San Diego Comic-Con that just happened last month. When you go to this one, you've obviously done other cons, but if you're going to the big ones, like the only thing I can put it in terms of is I used to go down. I had a friend of mine went to Tulane University in New Orleans, so I'd go down to New Orleans about 3 or 4 times, usually for Mardi Gras, Halloween, Jazz Fest, another random floating holiday. But when you experience Mardi Gras in New Orleans, coming back home to Soulard, they do a great job, but it's just like whelming. Is it when you go to a smaller con after being at the big two, do you get that same feeling?
You know, it's kind of refreshing. Of course, the bigger cons bring in that the talent. Everybody wants to go to New York and San Diego, but I will say one of my favorite conventions that I've ever gone to is Planet Comic Con in Kansas City.
Yeah.
You know, at that convention, I had a chance to sit and talk to Tom King for like 25, 30 minutes because there was no one around us.
Yeah.
I remember very vividly and, you know, comic fans at home will know the name, but when I was speaking to Tom in that moment there, I think it was, Planet Comic Con 2017, I was living in St. Louis at the time. And, I was talking with him, and there was a very shy, kind of quiet artist next to him that was just sketching away with his head down. Didn't really look up at all. Every once in a while, Tom would try to get him involved in the conversation, but this man was just kind of sketching away, not really paying attention. And what I found out later, looking through pictures, that was actually Clay Mann.
Oh, now, wow.
Clay, people at home, you know, probably know Clay Mann. He worked with Tom on Batman and Catwoman. He worked with the Heroes in Crisis. He is, in my opinion, one of the best working comic creators today. And that's the kind of interactions that you get at these kind of medium or even smaller conventions. Another example is at St. Charles. Now, I actually live in St. Charles. I know I just said that while I was living in St. Louis. Everyone listening at home right now, I realize that St. Charles is not St. Louis, but for the lamest term,
we're getting angry texts already. I'm telling you.
Yeah, you're gonna get angry calls the moment I hop off here. But yes, I lived in St. Charles, and I think again it was in 2017. I went to St. Charles Comic Con. And the big guest that year was Chris Claremont. And yeah. I had a moment, that was my first time meeting Chris. And it was again, a very intimate type of situation where you could sit there and talk to him. And people who have met Chris at these conventions, whether that's a big one or a small one, you know that if you let him, he will talk for 45 minutes to an hour. Like, the line does not matter. Whoever's in front of him, he will talk to you face-to-face for far longer than you might even want to be honest.
I think it's him and Steranko, I think, try to outdo each other to see who can talk the longest before they let the next person in line through.
Yeah.
Steranko's nothing like that. Yeah, I was at Terrificon this past weekend in Connecticut. Just saw Chris Claremont, and it would be, you know, the line's huge, and someone puts a comic down, and he goes, "Oh my goodness," and he starts sitting there reading the comic book, flipping through page by page. It's hilarious. And he'll tell you, "You know what I was thinking on the day I wrote this?" And it's, you kind of want to sit around and listen to the story, so you really don't mind. It's one of those kind of things.
You said that was Steranko that did that?
No, that was Chris Claremont at Terrificon.
Okay,
Steranko just has some amazing stories that you're like, is this guy making it up right now? Because I don't know if this is an actual thing that could happen to a real person.
I was going to say, when you were telling the story, I didn't hear the name, but that's exactly how Claremont is too. Yeah. You know, it's funny at that, I think it was maybe Planet Comic Con 2017. That was another time that I met Claremont, and he told this really amazing story to the person in front of me about this secret origin of Gambit, how he had these plans to introduce Gambit as like this clone of Wolverine. And like this, he had this long drawn out story. And one of my friends who actually works at the Fantasy Shop. Now, for a long time, people who, you know, listen to the Oblivion Bar and people who are from St. Louis, they know the Fantasy Shop. It's an institution, you know, one of the longest running comic book shops in the U.S. I am, again, shamelessly plugging them because they are my local comic book shop. And, you know, since 1981, they've been an amazing comic shop. One of the employees there was at New York Comic Con a couple of years ago. And I told him, I said, "Hey, I know you want to meet Chris Claremont. Ask him about this story about Gambit. Because it was such a cool experience." And the friend, the one that worked at Fantasy Shop, loves the X-Men, like a long time, like 70s and up X-Men fan. And we get to the front of the line there at New York, and my friend asks him that story, and Chris looks at him bewildered and is like, "What are you talking about? What Gambit secret origin?" Like, that's the kind of, you were just said it there a moment ago. That's the kind of story where I'm like, is Chris just making this stuff up as he goes? Like, is he just doing it to entertain himself, or does he just like legitimately forget?
You got to kind of wonder sometimes. And again, the same thing, the only thing that keeps me thinking Steranko is serious is because he was at Planet Comic Con, I want to say 2017, and he was just there again this past year. And I heard him tell one of the same stories almost verbatim with very little change. I'm like, okay, if he's lying and making it up, he's very good at the story. So you got to kind of wonder.
Yeah, no, absolutely. These guys, they don't get out much. You know, the creators, they have what's called like selective fame. So like, they can go to Kroger, they can go to, you know, you know, any grocery store anywhere, and no one will know them. But they go to these cons, and that's when they're on the stage, right? They get to interact with these people, and these creators, they get to experience a visceral emotional reaction from their fans that, you know, the fans think that they know them so well. You read a Tom King story, you're like, "Oh, I'm getting a peek into this man's mind." But the comic creator doesn't know you, and it's just a very cool but also really odd interaction, and it's always fun to see from the outside. Of course, I'm a fan as well, so I've had these interactions.
Right.
I remember very vividly, this is no shame to Kyle Higgins, but the first time I met Kyle Higgins, writer of, you know, the Radiant Black series now, but one of my very first pull comics back in the day was his Nightwing New 52 run. And it's very important to me to this day. And when I go up to him at that con, I think, again, it might have been C2E2 2018, I walked up and I was like, this story means so much to me. And his reaction to this day is so funny to me because I know him now. He's actually a comic sketch art creator. But he was like, oh, thank you, and just, like, signed my Nightwing and handed it back to me. You know, he didn't know how to react to my, like, emotional reaction to this Nightwing run.
Yeah, no, I've seen, and again, going to the comic book cons, I've seen that from other people when there was just a guy at Terrific Con who met Walton Louise Simonson. He was one right in front of me in line, and he started tearing up because he asked Walt to do a sketch for him, and Walt started sketching out Beta Ray Bill, and you could see the guy getting visibly choked up watching Walt do this sketch right in front of him, like, man, a lot of times I think, I'm not sure if these creators are aware the significance they have in so many people's lives who, like you and I, comic books have been almost a part of our DNA growing up. And I think that's so important that hopefully they all know they're that beloved. But I think that always kind of makes them happy to see, wow, I've got a genuine reaction from this person because of my writing or my art.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And these creators, we've been very fortunate on the Oblivion Bar to have a lot of amazing creators. You know, the aforementioned Tom King, Jason Aaron. We actually just recently had Jay Baruchel and Van Jensen, who are writing Tearing Me Apart over at Dark Horse Comics. Patton Oswalt and Jordan Blum not too long ago. Brian Michael Bendis. Like, and I love asking the question of that scenario that I just highlighted here on the show is like, what is your reaction when you get these interactions with your fans? Like, does it ever wear on you? How do you react to someone who is having like that type of emotional response? And I actually really love Jason Aaron's response to this when I asked him on the show, and he was like, it never gets old. It's why I go to these cons. Like, I don't need to go to these cons anymore. I wrote Thor for 8 years. I'm good. But I go to interact with my fans in a way that, you know, I can express to them how much I appreciate them in the same way that they can, you know, express to me how much my work means to them, because they are sitting in these rooms writing or, you know, penciling or inking or lettering by themselves 95% of the time. That 5% of the time where they get to go out in public, you know, in New York, in San Diego, in Chicago, Emerald City and Seattle, Heroes, like you said, these are the interactions that they live for. This is why they do it.
Right. Yeah, you know, I to your point too. I know when we had Dan Slott and Rick Burchett both on the show to talk about She-Hulk just before the series came out, because they had that great run that the two of them did on the book. And you know, to Dan's credit, he's like, I take a lot of crap online from people who are behind a keyboard. He said, but it's when I'm in front of those people and they bring me something to sign, they're like, you have no idea how much this meant to me. He said that all goes away, all the bad stuff, all the negative stuff you see online, because that's the genuine reaction from people, not just something behind a keyboard saying, oh, your stuff is rubbish.
Yeah, no, I had a chance to work with Dan at San Diego last year. I was his handler for every signing that he had.
So
again, you know, I keep saying this, I apologize, I keep shamelessly plugging them, but Comic Sketch Art, you know, he is part of that under that banner, and it was so cool. That is actually one of the coolest experiences I've had at these conventions, is watching Dan Slott interact with his fans, because whether you like his work or not, and I am someone who loves a lot of his work and have questions about other parts. But his interactions and his sincerity and genuine approach to, you know, guest interaction was so cool. And, you know, every single time that a fan walks up, you know, we were just speaking on Claremont, how he'll tell the same stories or he'll, you know, maybe even make up a story here or there. But Dan has a fun, different story for everything. Like, we just talked about She-Hulk. If you brought up a She-Hulk, and then the next person brought up a She-Hulk, and the next person, and then a Silver Surfer, and then a Spider-Man, he will have a different, fun, really interesting story about every single one of those characters and that run.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. That, like I said, one of the best things about Comic-Cons for me, and I know, like I said, you're ended up working part of the time at SDCC, which would drive me crazy because I'm like, oh, it's more time. I can't be out there doing this, that, and the other. But going to these conventions, especially meeting people who are, hopefully they'll be around for it, but they're getting up there. Like Alan Davis was just at Terrific Con, Walton Louise Simonson. It's like getting to have that one-on-one, especially at the smaller cons like a Planet Comic Con or a Terrific Con, is really the main reason I go. It's such a great time to say thank you for the work you've done, and could I please get this signed? And I think you and I were discussing via direct or maybe it was over Twitter, where you said you got quite a few slabs signed, ones at SDCC, and I ended up doing the same. I ended up getting 16 of them at Terrific Con.
Yeah. Generally, I do 2 to 3 at each show. San Diego Comic Con 2023, I did 17.
Yeah.
I thought it was 22, but I went back and looked at it. It was actually 17. And to kind of go back on your previous point, talking about, getting that quick moment and interaction, I don't have any, I used to have a little bit of FOMO going to these big cons. You know, instead of working for Comic Sketch Art, I would think, well, it would be nice to just be a guest. I will tell you now, and everyone listening at home, James, you as well, getting to speak to Ryan Stegman face to face for 30 to 45 minutes, or getting to hang out with Tom King and Mitch Gerrits for a half an hour while they get to sign and watch these interactions, is so much better than going out on the floor and wasting money, essentially. I'll say it, everything that I buy, I appreciate when I go to these conventions, but it's always the thought of how am I going to get this home?
Yeah, no, exactly.
That's always the hardest part.
I purposely pack a small carry-on and a backpack so I do not buy anything when I go to a con. Otherwise, I'm like, I would just, there's no way. I couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I apologize. I've been so neglectful of our people in the chats. I apologize to all of you. We have Michelle Shea. Say hello. She's looking to win those Across the Spider-Verse live concert tickets we'll be giving away later. Chance Bartels, our friend from Atlanta, hello to you. We've got Kathy Rice in the comments. Hello, Kathy. And we've got BK from Atlanta on as well. Hello, BK. Thank you all for chiming in. I apologize for ignoring the comments. Chance from Atlanta wanted to know, he said, you've got very cool tattoos. Are they comic book related?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So if you look there on the screen, the one on my outer forearm is actually a panel from Parable by Mobius and Stan Lee. It's actually Stan Lee's last Silver Surfer run.
Oh, neat.
And that's my favorite comic run of all. Well, it's not really a run. It's only two issues, but it's my favorite comic of all time. And that panel right there is actually right before he takes on Galactus in the storyline, where he essentially says, if we did things for glory or money or praise, then where's the valor in that? And that's essentially what, Norn is saying to, I'm forgetting her name right now for some reason. Of course, I just said it's my favorite comic of all time, but now I'm forgetting her name. But he's essentially saying that you do good things because they're good things. If we don't do things for praise, we do them because it's the right thing to do. And that's essentially what Silver Surfer to me is in a nutshell. He's my favorite comic book character of all time. And that's why I love him so much.
Very cool. This has been great. I appreciate you taking the time on your birthday. Happy birthday again, by the way.
Thank you so much.
To come on the show and break down San Diego Comic-Con for the listeners. If people want to follow you, if people want to check out the Oblivion Bar, what are your social media handles and websites so people can keep track of you and what you've got going on?
All right, let's see how well I can do this pitch. So the Oblivion Bar is essentially a week in review of all things nerd. We are available on wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pandora, Amazon Music, all of them. If you listen to podcasts, look for us on there. We are there. Our website is www.oblivionbarpodcast.com. What we usually do is we usually review movies and television series. Of course, we're not doing that right now because we are standing with the writers and producers and actors of the world right now. Once the strike's over, we'll get back to that. But outside of that, we love to interview creators. Like I said, we just interviewed Jay and Van yesterday. That'll be this week's episode. And then next week, we are interviewing Ethan Parker, Griffin Sheridan, and Bob Quinn on their upcoming Image Comics series, Kill Your Darlings. So make sure you guys tune in for that. James, thank you so much for having me here on Geek to Me Radio. I love St. Louis. Although I am I'm in Indianapolis now. I just recently moved. St. Louis holds a very special place in my heart. And I am so happy to have spent this evening with you, spent my birthday with you. It's my 32nd, so it's not really anything to really celebrate at this point. So, but thank you again. I really appreciate it. And
Yeah, thanks for the time. Hopefully we can do it again, maybe for your 33rd. We'll see.
heck yeah, I'll be here.
Thanks. I appreciate it, Chris. Have a great rest of your night.
Thank you.
There he goes, Chris Hacker, the Oblivion Bar podcast. Make sure to check that out. We're going to take a very quick commercial break. We're going to come right back, and Joey V and I are going to break down Barbenheimer. You're going to hear about our thoughts on both Barbie and Oppenheimer, what's to like about them, is there anything to dislike about them, should you go see them in the theater. We'll talk about all that and more, and plus we've got those Into the Spider-Verse live in concert tickets to give away that's being seen at the Factory in Chesterfield later next month. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio on the Big 550 KTRS. Please stand by.
Yo, 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 what up, party animals? Girls, it's Greg Sipes, the voice of Beast Boy, and you're listening to Geek to Me Radio. That's what's up.
We are back. Geek to Me Radio, heard here on the Big 550 KTRS every Sunday night, 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 o'clock Central, for those of you who are actually listening on the radio here in St. Louis. I want to make sure we tell you about our official comic book sponsor, Bugs Comics and Games, which are located on Bryan Road in O'Fallon, Missouri, easily accessible from either Highway 70 or from 364. Check them out. It was just out there to get my pull list. I signed up for the Avengers Club. I'm a legacy member because I used to belong to it way back when Larry owned a comic book shop on West Florissant, and then each time he'd move in Florissant and Hazelwood, I'd keep up with him there. Reopened his shop here just it's almost 2 years, I think. It'll be in October since he reopened the shop, and it's my favorite place to go for comic books. He's got new comics, back issues, which for me always makes a comic book shop. If I go to a comic book shop and they just have new issues, I kind of want to see the back issues. I want to browse, even if I'm not buying. I want to go through and see, oh, I used to have this one, or oh, how cool is this cover? And it's great when you're there with someone as knowledgeable as Larry as well, because Larry knows comic books. He's been collecting for longer than I've been alive. The man's so smart. He's got an encyclopedic knowledge of comic books. You're like, yeah, I kind of want this issue where Captain America did this thing with the Red Skull. Oh, he'll pull it right out. Yep, this happened in Captain America issue 134, and it's got this story. Here's the follow-up. It also crossed over into Tales of Suspense. He knows it all. If you're wanting to get back into comic book reading, if you're looking for a certain back issue, if you're wanting to come in cold, you want a jumping on point because you're seeing all these things on the big screen, Larry's your guy. Go in and say, hey, I just heard about you on Geek Me Radio. We're looking for the new Spider-Man, or we're looking, how do we get into the new She-Hulk comics? What's the back issues of She-Hulk? He will walk you through the process. And if you join the Avengers Club like I did, you'll get to save money on your comic books as you're buying them. New issues, back issues, bags and boards, toys, collectibles, all that stuff. You'll start saving money because why not save some money and still enjoy your hobby even in this economy? Check them out on Facebook, Bugs Comics and Games. Give the Facebook page a like. Larry will be very happy that you did. And make sure to go out there and check them out. Bugs Comics and Games. Very proud to have them as the official comic book sponsor here on Geek to Me Radio. With that said, my executive producer, Joey V, he goes and sees the movies, and he and I try to see the similar movies. We'll go out and see them at different times. I figured with all the Barbenheimer stuff, the hashtag Barbenheimer, it's Barbie and Oppenheimer, which both came out in the same day, that he and I would talk about these movies because he's much better spoken about movies than I am. I'm like, yeah, it was good. I liked it because a bomb stuff blew up. And he'll be like, well, actually, the cinematography in the 70 millimeter was not. So he's here. He's going to talk about this with me to make the show sound good, like I know what I'm talking about. So, Joey, I appreciate you doing this tonight and chatting about movie knowledge of these two movies.
Not to brag, but I don't know. How did you see Oppenheimer? Did you see it in 70 millimeter?
IMAX.
IMAX?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was going to do a 70 millimeter showing, but I'm like, that's another 3 hours, dude. I mean,
I'm going to try and sound like I'm smart, but I am not. I have no way to keep track of all of this stuff. So Ronnie's is the big theater here in St. Louis, and they have IMAX, but it's digital. Digital IMAX. So it's not even Christopher Nolan's, you know, big 70 millimeter print, right, that weighs 600 pounds that can wrap around the earth three times. So it's hard to find that 70 millimeter and then on film. Plus, it has to be a certain shape. Like, if you get the one that's 1431, that's the big one that's more square-like, that has more height and up and down, and okay, that's actually what he filmed, you have to, like, drive to Indiana or Kentucky or something to see that. So I can't even keep all that straight. And then Ronnie's is also bragging that they have a 70-millimeter print, but it's the different shape. It's 220 in one, huh. So it's not even the big square one. So St. Louis is not worthy of Christopher Nolan's original vision that he was planning.
Okay, so for the listeners then, if they want to go see this movie, would you recommend, given those limitations, should they bother seeing it in either IMAX or the 70-millimeter version, or is just going to the regular screening going to be okay?
You know, I would definitely go for at least the right shape. You know, the 1431, the more the square shape, because that is more detail of what he actually filmed. Show more stuff on the top and the bottom of the screen. A screen so big that, you know, you got so much more detail to look at. I'd go with that rather than just one that's more cropped. That always bugged me whenever I worked at Blockbuster. People would come in and they didn't know the difference between widescreen and pan and scan and all that. And like, just go with whatever the director's original vision. So I'd go with, If you can find that shape, the 1431 in IMAX, probably go with that one.
Okay. So if you're listening out there and you're not in the greater St. Louis area, see if a theater close to you has actual 1431 for 70mm.
Yeah, IMAX has their own site that keeps track of that. I think there's only 19 screens in all of the United States that's showing that specific 600-pound reel in that shape. So I think they call it 70mm, 15 perf. I am not smart enough to keep up with all of this stuff.
See, I thought I got off easy seeing it in IMAX. I'm like, wow, that was great. We saw it in IMAX. Who were telling me it wasn't actual... the IMAX that Christopher Nolan intended me to see.
I don't think so. People like to throw around that word LIMAX sometimes when not actual film and IMAX projection. I snuck into the IMAX screen at Ronnie's the other day just to see if it was film because I couldn't even keep it straight on what they had. So I sat in the front row just to see if it was shaking a little bit because that's the way I always could tell if it was film, had a little bit of movement. And it wasn't. I said, all right, well, this is laser projected. Mm. And then I climbed on the back seat to sneak into the window. See, if I put my ear to the window, if I could hear the film whirring around, and I didn't hear it. So that's how dumb I am. I could have just looked on their website just to see what
they had. Well, you're already there. You might as well investigate Scooby-Doo style while you're there. That's fine.
I know, right? So sorry to bore everyone with that. But you said I know about the millimeters, and I had to come out the gate sounding smart.
And you did. You did a great job. Just for those of you keeping track at home, as of today, Sunday, August 6th, Barbie has a total gross of $16 million. Oppenheimer, a little better than half, 9.17 million total gross.
What is Barbie's this number? 16? You mean in one day? 16?
For the weekend.
Oh, for the weekend.
Yeah, the total gross, as I was getting to. See, I'm trying to sound smart. Now you're derailing. Now I feel like an idiot.
No, I was like, for the weekend. My goodness.
Yeah, for the weekend.
And these have been
million.
Out since July 21st.
Yeah, 17 days in release. The total gross on Barbie is at $459 million, and the total gross for Oppenheimer is $228 million. So I don't know.
They're slowing down.
No, it doesn't appear to be. And they're the number one and number two still. 17 days in release. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles took number three at the box office this weekend with 8.3 million this weekend. Total gross, 43 million. Meg 2, The Trench, is somehow at number four.
Jason Statham will get the numbers up higher.
Let's hope
so. He will transport that fish to every theater to make sure everyone sees it.
I don't know if we needed a Meg 2, but the one I'm disappointed by, and not that we're going to dwell on this one, is Haunted Mansion, because I saw that.
Too spooky.
I really enjoyed it. It was a family movie. It was probably the most fun I've had at a live-action Disney movie since Pirates of the Caribbean, the original one. It was fun. The cast was a perfect ensemble. No one overshadowed anyone else, which you've got some star power like Rosario Dawson and, you know, you've got Danny DeVito. It was a very well-done ensemble cast. It was spooky, little kind of creepy, but never like, oh, you shouldn't bring kids to see this. It was just a lot of fun, and it's the first time I've just had no-hold-barred fun in a Disney movie since, like I said, Pirates of the Caribbean. So I'm sad that's number five. So if you're listening right now, go show Haunted Mansion some love this weekend. Take your family and go see that one. That's my recommendation, especially if you've already seen Barbie and Oppenheimer.
Could you imagine if movie theaters actually made the seats move and then you went into a real house and then things talked? Oh,
they've got that ride. Yeah,
there's that ride.
Yeah,
never mind.
Disney,
okay.
Yeah.
They should base a ride on that movie.
One of my favorite rides at Disney World to this date, still, the Magic Kingdom is Haunted Mansion. I love it. Just so much fun.
I actually have a close relationship with Haunted Mansion also because I worked at Radio Disney for like 6 years, and I had to listen to people talk about this stupid theme park every day. They were talking about the intricacies of the sidewalks and getting from Epcot to Hollywood Studios without getting on a bus, and I was bored to tears. And then I was given unlimited free passes to Disney World, and I became one of those nutbags. And right when I walked into Disney World, it was 8 o'clock at night because we drove there. We got there late. And I walked in, and just the sight of Haunted Mansion drew me to it. I was walking down Main Street, and then I just could not stop walking directly to Haunted Mansion. It's the first ride I ever rode when I got to Disney World, and it was incredible. The magic gave me goosebumps going in, so I will always have a fond place in my heart for Haunted Mansion and the stretching room and all of that.
The great thing
about buggies.
And we're dwelling on this, and I shouldn't, but the great thing about the new Haunted Mansion movie is there's a lot of Easter eggs. Like, if you've been on the Haunted Mansion, I guess you'd call it a ride, you've been on it, and the voiceovers and everything like that, and all the scenes that you witness as you're going through, they bring a lot of that into the movie.
Hidden Mickeys in there.
It's so much fun. So, yes, we've got, going back to the comments, Chase says he hasn't seen Oppenheimer because it's too long.
And too scary.
It is. Well,
all of these movies.
Atomic energy nowadays, it is kind of scary.
Cold Water Creek is more terrifying, yes.
Yes, clearly. I mean,
because of the atomic energy in it.
But yeah, Chance, I'd recommend going through it because the 3 hours, in my opinion, it never drug. It was ebbs and flows, but it never drug. I thought that was the quickest 3 hours I've ever spent in a movie. Michelle Shea says that she liked Space Mountain at Disney World, and then Haunted Mansion was pretty cool, and seeing ghosts sitting next to you when you had that thing when you're looking at the mirror, you've got the projection in as you go through the ride sideways, and you see a ghost sitting next to you, and it says they'll follow you home, which was, again, a little key thing they put into Haunted Mansion. We're going to get off Haunted Mansion. I was just giving the top five movies, but we want to talk more about Oppenheimer and Barbie. Tell you what, let's reset. Let me take a very quick commercial break. We will come right back.
Get your texting fingers ready, 84126. Tell us how you feel.
That's right. You can send it, or if you're in the chat, like Michelle and Chance just were, you can send the chats there, or you can text us at 84126, as Joey said. And we are going to give away those pair of tickets to see Into the Spider-Verse live in concert at the Factory on September 3rd. We'll give those away later tonight. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio on the Big 550 KTRS. Please stand by.
This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio.
Welcome back to Geek to Me Radio. I'm your host, James Enstall. That's Joey V sitting right across me as we break down Barbenheimer. We'll make sure we tell you about our premier sponsor, Greater St. Charles Convention and Visitors Bureau, discoverstcharles.com. If you haven't visited their website lately, go check it out. Take a moment and just go to discoverstcharles.com. See all the cool things they have going on there. They've still got their exhibit up, The Art of the Arcade, at the Foundry down there. That's worth going to just to hang out, play some of those old coin-op arcade games. Take a look at all the displays they've got set up, including my own personal NES with Rob the Robot they've got set up there as well. You can take a look at all that kind of stuff. If you're an arcade fan, this is really cool to see. They've got some great pieces donated by Two Plumbers Brewery and Arcade. But there's always something fun to do in St. Charles, whether it's, you know, some outdoors activity, whether it's taking in a new restaurant, trying some new food, or just looking around at all the shops they have down there. It is made up of small businesses, this whole area, North and South Main. So if you're looking to go someplace new for dinner, maybe don't go to TGI Fridays or Applebee's or one of the chain restaurants. Go check out some of these small restaurants, these independently, privately owned places down there on South Main Street. Maybe don't go to Kohl's or Target or Hallmark to get a gift for somebody. Check out the little shops that are strewn up and down North and South Main that have such great gift ideas, usually by local people, and the stores are owned locally. You're putting that money directly back into the local economy. And if you're listening from out of town, like Chris was listening or calling into the show, I should say, from Indiana, maybe you're wanting to plan a trip, start at the website, discoverstcharles.com. Find out what kind of accommodations you want, some things you might want to do, some attractions that are going on, and plan your trip around that. Make sure you check out this show, because we will be talking about Legends and Lanterns and Christmas Traditions. They're two big festivals they have coming up later this year as we get closer to those dates. Never a bad time to visit St. Charles. Once again, that website, discoverstcharles.com. Discoverstcharles.com. As we always say, it's an historically good time. We've got Joey V, my executive producer, sitting across from me. We're talking about Barbenheimer, which is, of course, Barbie and Oppenheimer came out on the same exact day, both doing pretty well. Barbie outpacing Oppenheimer by quite a bit. But I think, Joey, that's due to the fact that it's not a heavy historical piece. It's a fun, light movie about a toy. I mean, it's like, would you want to go see JFK or do you want to see Super Mario Brothers? Maybe it's a bad example with John Leguizamo, but you get my point. It's more of a fun, upbeat movie.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be two totally different vibes, and you should not dress up for Oppenheimer the same way that you dress up for Barbie. It's been a party. Have you been to the theater and seen everyone dressed up in their hottest pink outfits?
You saw my pictures.
Yes, you took the wife. She dressed up. She wore the heels, too.
She wore the heels. I had an ascot. I had a bright pink ascot.
It's definitely a different vibe in the theater right now, because I like to go on Mondays a lot just to have the theater to myself. And I went on a Monday and it was still just hopping. People are treating it like a party, and it's almost pre-COVID type of level.
I know,
packed theaters. I love what this is doing for the box office and movies in general.
And they need it right now, because we're not going to be getting much stuff coming down the pike if this strike continues much longer. So it'll be interesting to see if we have a big drop off at the box office later this year, like late this year into early next year, we'll see what that does for our box office numbers there. But the fact that it's, you and I have talked about this before, you know, I'm a movie guy, I like going to see them in the theater. So it makes me very happy. Like I said, the one we went to, I was like, I feel a little self-conscious. I'm dressed in my pink shirt, my khakis, my pink ascot. Laura's dressed up, but I'm like, everyone there.
Yes.
We had, I was one of only three other guys in my screening, but they were dressed up too. They had,
on shirts. You went to the front and said, raise your hands.
Yeah. They had on like a tiger stripe. The one kid almost looked like Zoolander, except he had, I'm not sure if he dyed his hair bleach blonde for this, so that was his natural hair color, but everyone was dressed up and it was so much fun. I haven't dressed up to go see a movie since the second Austin Powers movie.
I dressed up for Watchmen, actually.
Oh, how cool.
I created my own t-shirt because I couldn't just show up naked.
Like, well, yeah, that's frowned upon.
Yeah, so I got a blue t-shirt and I painted muscles and stuff on it just so I could dress up like Professor Manhattan.
Dr. Manhattan. Oh my gosh.
Excuse me.
All right, Joey's done for the night.
You know how many years of medical school he went through? You call him.
I know, exactly right. He didn't get 8 years of Manhattan Medical School to be called Mr. or Professor. Thank you. Michelle Shea wants to know, what about Blue Beetle? I'm looking forward to it. I like the character. Ted Kord Blue Beetle is actually my favorite Blue Beetle. I'm not as big of a fan of Jaime Reyes Blue Beetle, nor the original Dan Garrett Blue Beetles. I am Ted Kord, just because when I grew up in the 80s. But I do like Zolo, the actor from Cobra Kai. Michelle, as you said, I think that's a good choice for Jaime, and I think the movie has a nice vibe to it. I'm excited about seeing it.
I went and saw trailers before Barbie, and one of them was Blue Beetle. And my girl, she did not know Blue Beetle was a thing that existed.
Really?
I mean, I know it because of you and the interviews that we've conducted with some of the creators.
But yeah, Paris Cullins we've had on.
Blue Beetle is not a character that people know. So
no.
It's interesting to see if that catches on. Like Ant-Man, people probably didn't know much about him before he came out.
Yeah, Iron Man was a C-level hero in the Marvel pantheon at best. You know, sales were never great on the book, but look at what happened. And Guardians of the Galaxy is another prime example. James Gunn took this and boom, shot them up to now they're hugely prominent. So we'll see. This, I've heard talk that maybe this will be part of James Gunn's new universe. Maybe it won't. I think they're going to let the box office decide to see whether or not they keep it. But who knows what that'll bring going forward. For Barbie, I know you and I were talking about off air. It's gotten some hate.
There are some controversies around Barbie.
And we talked about Ben Shapiro going on a rampage. And I told you, I said, when I went to English school.
School, I did not complete.
My time on the Thames. No, I went to Westminster College, and I had an English professor who said you can literally, as an English person, find meaning in anything. And she broke down The Cat in the Hat. This person wrote this four or five page paper on Freudian meaning and the this dissolution of Christian sentiment in The Cat in the Hat.
Oh, Theodore Geisel's piece. Yes,
yes,
I remember.
Yes. Mr. Dr. Seuss. Again, that's another doctor. We only talk about doctors on this show, not Professor Seuss. But I think that some people are going into this, and it's at the end of the day, I saw this movie too. It's a movie about a toy. I think, and you and I talked about this, I thought there was maybe a little bit of man hate, but it wasn't the point where I'm offended. This is horrible. They are teaching people. No, it's a movie about a toy, for crying out loud. And it's absurd. You've got Will Ferrell. When was the last time Will Ferrell was in a serious docudrama about the, you know, it just... I don't understand the level of hate it's getting. I think it was a fun movie. I thoroughly enjoyed myself. I'd probably go back and see it again just because I'm sure I missed a lot of stuff. And then it's got Kate McKinnon. And I've never not enjoyed Kate McKinnon in anything I've seen her in. So I thought it was great. Did you have similar... You went and saw it with your lady, right?
Yeah, I love Barbie. It's very funny. I would say that the plot is something you've seen before in Toy Story, The Matrix, Lego Movie. And so you know the basic plot points. But there is so much care put into the jokes. The jokes are so funny that you can just forget all logic. You don't really have to break it down. You know, Ben Shapiro is a bit of a Rain Man type where things have to be literal. They said this is the real world. And in the real world, Will Ferrell is not the head of Mattel. I don't understand.
Isn't high enough.
Yeah, I understand. He's got so many complaints that's just big rage for clicks, you know. And so there's no point in listening to the hate because it is just fun the entire time.
Am I doing this wrong? Because we don't get as many clicks as Ben Shapiro. Should I be doing more hate?
I think it could work, but you'd have to deal with people not wanting to go and meet you. I know at Comic-Con,
no one wants
people
to meet me
recognize
now. How's
you
that
sometimes.
There's no change about that at all.
Are you Mr. Geek to me?
Right. Are you Mr. Radio? No.
So
it's Dr. Radio.
If you break down the logic of Barbie, some of it doesn't follow, and they even make fun of that. You know, the magic of it is that it got made at all. They hate on Mattel in the movie, which is funny because Mattel is the one bankrolling the whole thing. You know, they make fun of the types of people that can be a Barbie. You know, they say in the very beginning that girls originally just played with baby dolls, and then they break their baby dolls. And then they kind of make fun of Midge, who is this Barbie that was pregnant, but they discontinued it. So there's all sorts of things.
And poor
that
go, Alan.
Yeah. There's not really a point in Alan being in the movie, but he's funny. He has a great fight scene. I think they just go for the joke no matter what. And you can be offended if you want. There are a speech that America Ferrera does that talks about how hard it is being a woman. If you feel like getting mad at that, maybe you need to look at yourself and decide why you got mad about that.
I'm just going to say it's hard to be a man, too. Men get far more prostate cancer than women, and that's a fact I'm going to stick by.
Yeah.
I'm just going to point it out.
I would say that if you are maybe on the wrong side of it, when Ken goes into the real world and finds the patriarchy, you should have been happy about that. Like, oh, man, finally, Ken broke away from Barbie and found how cool it is to own a horse. You know, that was you don't have to take everything as this is the...
Do you not like horses?
I love horses.
Okay,
it's an extinction of man.
Just something you said. I'm just expecting, I want to make sure.
There's not a deeper meaning behind everything that they say. It's just they're going for the joke, making fun of everyone takes a hit, I would say.
Not according to my professor, Bobby Joe Allen from Westminster College.
Love you, Bobby Joe.
Chance wanted to know, do Ken and Barbie become dolls in the end, like the classic Twilight Zone episode, The After Hours? Love the shout out. I don't want to ruin anything on the air, Chance, for anyone who hasn't seen Barbie yet, so I don't want to give away spoilers. And again, Michelle just said spoilers. I don't think we said anything that was spoilerish. I think we're just talking about
Once the movie makes 900 million, that's most of the population of the world.
That's true. And they're almost there, to be fair.
This is going to be a billion-dollar movie, and not to keep giving Ben Shapiro clicks, but he saw it in the first week, and he said, this movie will be a disaster and won't make any money. This is one of the biggest movies ever.
Yeah,
this is
going to
break a billion for sure.
That weekend, between that and Oppenheimer, I mean, like you said, it's bringing people back into the theaters, which I love, whether it's not... it's Limax or if it's actual 70 millimeter film.
Mm-hmm.
I like the fact that people are going out and it's a well done movie. I will say it's not, Oppenheimer is never going to be my favorite movie. It's not going to break my top 10 favorite, but it is the best movie I've seen in the past 5 years. I will say that score's great. Acting's great. If you go to geektomeradio.com, you can see my full review for Oppenheimer. And it's the only movie that I can recall since I've been reviewing movies that I've ever given a 10 out of 10 to.
Mm.
It was that good. I haven't reviewed Barbie yet. There's a lot of movies I haven't reviewed because Joey and I were talking. I don't like typing because I think I sound either too stupid or I'm trying to not sound stupid, so I end up coming off pretentious. So I hate having to actually type up a review. I'm going to try to get better at it.
That's get you one of them Flintstones Dictabirds.
There you go. Yeah, I think you can say Dictabird on the air.
I hope so. With Oppenheimer, if you like JFK, a three-hour movie about one of the greatest things that's ever happened. Great? Is that? That's not.
Hold
one
on.
One of the
ladies
most
gentlemen.
Impactful things that have ever happened with JFK and that little assassination thing. If you like JFK, the movie, I think you'll really love Oppenheimer because it's 3 hours about one of the most historical, biggest events in the world, but it's a lot of talking about that event.
If I didn't put it in my review, I think I said that probably not since JFK 30 years ago now has a movie been so insightful and impactful about a historical event as Oppenheimer.
Oppenheimer's going to get nominated for all the things.
Very quick. I know we're coming up on the end of the hour here. I want to make sure we get our giveaway in for the Spider-Verse live in concert. So The Factory in Chesterfield is doing a live with orchestra. They're showing Spider-Verse, the first one in the Spider-Verse, on the screen while they have this live orchestra play the soundtrack. They've got an actual DJ as well, giving some of the tunes from the movie. It promises to be a fantastic event. It's September the 3rd, so if you are listening right now and you're in the greater St. Louis, St. Charles area, because I don't want to give the tickets away to someone like Chance, who's going to have to drive all the way up from Atlanta. No offense, Chance. I don't think you want to make that drive. I do want the tickets to go to someone who will be able to use them. So if you're in the St. Louis, St. Charles area, all you have to do is answer this simple question about the Spider-Verse at Spider-Verse Trivia. You can call on the main line 314-931-5877 with the answer. First caller with the correct answer will win those tickets. 314-931-5877. The character, sometimes known as Spider-Gwen, sometimes known as Ghost Spider. What is Gwen's last name? Into the Spider-Verse, across the Spider-Verse, we have the character of Spider-Gwen, or Ghost Spider as she's now known. What is Gwen's last name? Be the first person with that answer to call us at 314-931-5877. and we will give you that pair of tickets to go see Into the Spider-Verse live in concert.
I've got it on the screen there. Are you not? You're embarrassing.
I'm not looking at. I'm making eye contact with you. I'm looking at the phone. We got a caller. Hang on. I'm gonna take this live on the air. Hang on. Let's do this. Spider-Man Big 550 KTRS. Who's this?
It's Michelle Shea.
Michelle.
But really. It's. Hold on.
The last name.
Stacy.
Gwen Stacy. Michelle, that is correct. You have won those pair of tickets. I'm going to put you on hold. Stay on hold. I'm going to wrap the show up, and I'm going to come back and get your email address and phone number so we can get you those tickets, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Congratulations. Hang on for me.
Thank you.
She was threatening people in the chat, saying, you better not call. These are mine. So good on you. My goodness.
Put her back on hold here.
My mother's name is Michelle, so I feel like
I
should go with her. Just to make sure.
To?
Yeah. Give me some tickets too. I'm going to take her.
All right. Joey's going with you, Michelle. That's going to do it. Another show in the books. Thank you, Joey V, for talking movies with me and making me sound kind of like I know what I'm talking about.
It's
I appreciate that. And thank you to all those who listened tonight. Thank you to Chris Hacker from the Oblivion Bar podcast. Make sure you check them out. The Oblivion Bar, you can find them on Twitter. And, of course, check out the website with the great interviews they always do with some fantastic comic book creators. Thank you to all of you who have continued to support the show, continued to listen to the show each week, continue to make us part of your Sunday nights. Thank you, of course, to our sponsors, the Greater St. Charles Convention and Visitors Bureau and Bugs Comics and Games. Give their Facebook page like Bugs Comics and Games on Facebook. Thank you to all of our people in the chat. Thank you to all of you watching. Until next week, my friends. Good night.
Hey, kids. Are your parents about to buy you a shiny new toy from Amazon?
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
Well, don't be selfish. Share some of that money with us. Before going on Amazon, make sure to type in bit.ly/geektome in the web browser. It will look just like Amazon.com, except it'll say referral Geek to Me Radio up top. And then when you check out, a tiny percentage will go to support the show without costing you 1 cent more. So before your parents get you that gizmo, gadget, or widget, make sure they type in bit.ly/geektome in the web browser.
bit.ly/geektome bit.ly/geektome